Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Categorically Romance Podcast. My name is Bree, and I have an editor joining me today. I am so grateful every time an editor is willing to join, and listeners really enjoy listening to them as well. So here we are. We have editor Emma Cole with Harlequin here today. Emma, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us how 2024 started. We're recording literally the last day of March. How has the year been for you so far?
It's actually been really fantastic and also quite strange. I started the year as the associate editor for Romantic Suspense, and about a month ago, I was promoted to editor for Harlequin Intrigue. So it's been a little bit of a shift trying to figure out how all of the new books fit in to the things that I've worked on in the past, switching over some authors from me to the new editor and things like that. But it's been really great.
So you're no longer doing anything with Romantic Suspense?
I still have a couple of authors that I requested that I stick with. So I'm still editing a few people for Romantic Suspense, and I'm also editing the Coltons continuity up until about halfway through next year.
That is so cool. Okay, I have questions, but we'll get to them later. Okay, so you've told us a little bit about like work life. Tell us just a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I live just outside of Toronto, so I'm in the Toronto office. I have been reading since I was like 3. My house is full of books and craft supplies. I also sew and knit in my spare time, which is slightly less spare time than I used to have. I really enjoy working with authors. This has been such a fantastic journey so far.
Okay, I have a couple of icebreakers for you. So first thing that comes to mind, so 2 of your favorite things. It can be like your current obsessions right now, lifetime, whatever. 2 favorite things.
I would say my first favorite thing, which has been my favorite thing for a really long time, is the show Twin Peaks. I am a little bit obsessed. I have a tattoo. And I also, I don't think I could get through my life without having my sewing machine. I do a lot of sewing.
Have you been like a lifelong sewer, like little girl, or is it something you came into as an adult?
I actually, when I was about 11, I worked as a volunteer in a historical reenactment place up near my aunt's house, and I learned how to cross stitch and sew and embroider and all of that kind of stuff at the time. And then I picked it back up when my kids were really small, and I don't think I've stopped since.
Oh, that is so cool. I've been wanting to learn how to do something. I think a lot of women now are like, I should learn to sew, or I should learn to crochet. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think perfect audiobook activity, yeah, like yeah, something absolutely. To do. Yeah. What is something, and this may be sewing related, maybe it's not, what is something you've treated yourself to recently?
Actually, it would sort of combine my last 2 obsessions. I bought some yarn that is inspired by Twin Peaks, and it should be on its way to me very shortly. I'm really excited about it.
What do you love about the show?
It's so strange and weird, and also incredibly sincere. I love the emotional development of the characters. I am a huge fan of just things that don't quite fit in, quirky stories. It is scary in some places. It's funny in some places. It hit me in a way that I don't think I've watched anything since then that is similar. And yeah, so it's my comfort show.
Like, what would you kind of compare it to? Like, if you like this, try this.
Oh man. It kind of stands apart on its own. I've read a few books that are similar in style. Something called Bride of the Tornado that I read last year that I thought was brilliant. It's
in a lane of its own.
It's just weird.
Yeah. I think a lot of people that watch this love it, but I remember trying to get my sister to watch The Twilight Zone, and I was like, it's such a you show. And she's like, what does that mean? I was like, you like weird stuff. I was like, just watch it. And then she watched it and she was hooked, and she's like, I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. As an editor, as a reader, do you have a favorite romance trope? And if so, which is it?
It's tricky. There are so many really good ones, but I do love a good rivals to lovers trope.
Yes, 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 yes.
I feel like enemies to lovers is sometimes a little bit hard to pull off in a way that works in anything that's not like a fantasy story. But rivals to lovers, that's a good situation.
Rivals is the juice. Okay. Yes. I feel like when it's enemies, sometimes it's like one of them doesn't realize that they're in this enemies to lovers situation.
Right, exactly.
But with rivals, it's like, oh yeah, they both know. They both know. They understand the stakes. It's so good. If you came with a warning label, what would it say?
Oh, probably something like, please fill with caffeine before speaking.
Before speaking. Yes. So you're like, are you a morning coffee girl?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we love hearing romance origin stories. So tell us how you became a romance reader.
Oh, I feel like it's such a fraud when I talk about this. I actually was not a huge romance reader up until I started working for Harlequin. I had previously read a few books by Brenda Harlan, who is a special edition author. She's actually a friend of a friend of mine, and she would often drop off like a big stack of books. So my friend said, oh, you should read some of these, like, you know, when I was in between books. And I thought they were really great. And then I picked up a BJ Daniels, Hamilton, Montana's Intrigue, because I was looking for something in the crime kind of suspense realm that was a little less dark, because I had been reading a lot of quite dark stories. And I was just like, you know, maybe I could find something a little bit less bleak. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I thought it was so well done. And it's, you know, a miniseries. So I was like, I need to go read the other ones and figure out what's happening here. And that was the first time it really clicked for me that, okay, romance has something in here that I had not previously realized. And I really enjoy this.
Yeah, I came to romance like 2017. So I always am like, I feel like I've missed out on so much.
Yes,
but I also like appreciate, you know, having come to it later in life. But I read like on the Write for Harlequin, like the You Meet the Editors, like you are like is it horror and sci-fi fan?
I am. I am a huge horror fan. And I actually feel pretty strongly that horror and romance are two sides of the same coin.
I feel the same. I feel the same.
There's so much like high stakes and drama and real emotional situations. And it's just that in horror, things go kind of in the opposite direction.
Yeah. I haven't read – well, growing up, I was a Goosebumps kid.
Right.
And so like I was all things horror as a kid. And then I think as an adult, I started reading more like memoirs. I went through a big self-help phase. And then I found – I was like so into historical fiction. And then I found romance. And I don't know. I was like, I think when I got into paranormal, I was like, do horror and romance never like intersect? And then I found like Silhouette had an old line called The Shadows.
Yes.
And I've read a couple and I'm like, okay, people were trying, I think maybe like ahead of its time, but I feel the same. I'm like, they're so similar in so many ways. And people are like, you are crazy. I'm like, trust me on this. It can
work.
Yeah,
I fully believe. I've got a couple of authors that I've spoken to about it in the past, and it's like, I just need everybody else to get on board. We're gonna like bring horror romance into the space.
We have to bring it back. So like, okay, horror fan, book wise or movie, like do you have a favorite movie, like a favorite franchise?
No, it probably depends on the day.
Okay.
I have a hard time picking favorites for anything, but I read a lot of weird, again, with the weird, new weird horror is a really challenging genre when you start to get into it. And then I've just devoured so many things. I love Jeff Vandermeer. My stack of books next to my bed is giant. There's so many good things out there. There's such a resurgence of people exploring new themes and looking at situations with different perspectives that I find really refreshing. And it's fun to read. It's inspiring.
Yeah. I bought one recently. I think it's like not a reimagining. It has like the Hill House title in it. I think is it Return to Hill House or something like that? And I'm like, I'm into this because I love the books. I love the movie. And I was like, I'm not mad at us bringing the story back to life or breathing new life into it, returning to it. I haven't read it yet, but I was like, I'm not mad at this, but I do like the weirdness that we're seeing. I have a lot of friends in romance that are like, I just want to see some weird stuff. And I'm like,
yes, okay. Right? Yeah.
I read on the Write for Harlequin website that prior to joining the Harlequin team, you worked many years as a freelance copy editor. So take us through your journey to like entering the world of editing. Like, how does that happen?
Sure. I started by going to the book and magazine publishing program after I finished my degree. And it's a university or a college called Centennial College, and they had this program. I think it's still running. And it's a year after you finish your, I had a comms degree, and I had never really thought about the fact that you could specifically go to school to learn how to do books and magazines. And being that I've been such an avid reader my whole life, I thought, okay, this is something that could be interesting. And it gives you a really broad overview of how things go, but I gravitated towards the editorial side of things pretty quickly, took some courses in copy editing and that kind of thing. And the best part about this program was that they gave you a placement afterwards. So I worked for Scholastic as an intern, and I was there for my 3 months or whatever it was, and then they hired me on after that. So I did a whole bunch of things, you know, reading slush, you know, working on projects, and then I ended up moving to Key Porter Books, which is a small Canadian, or was a small Canadian indie publisher. So I worked on some fiction there, some nonfiction. I was the editorial assistant. And then I had my first child. And after my maternity leave was up, I went in to talk to my boss. And they said, you know, why don't you just freelance? Because I live far enough away from the office that it was going to cost me a lot of money, more than my salary, to pay for daycare and commuting. And they said, we'll just give you some projects, you can work from home, you know, like be flexible and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, okay, well, that could work. So I decided I would try that out for a little bit. And then Key Porter closed. So I had to sort of pivot and find some other clients, because again, working in Toronto is a bit of an expensive venture when you're on an editorial assistant salary. So I had all my contacts from school, most of whom were still working in publishing. And I just sort of started cold emailing everybody saying, you know, do you have room for freelancers? What are you looking for? I can do proofreading, I can do copy editing, etc. And then I stuck with that. I had a couple of more kids, and I enjoyed the freedom of being able to work sort of as my kids needed me to be around. And then I could work after hours or whatever. And I built up sort of a big enough client base that it was a viable situation. I worked on a lot of genres. I worked in academic publishing and fiction and memoirs and all kinds of things. And one of the contacts that I had made through school had stayed at Harlequin. That was where she had her internship. And when this associate editor position showed up for Romantic Suspense, I said, you know, it was just after COVID. I was really feeling a little isolated. And one of the best things was that Harlequin had switched to a hybrid working situation, so I wouldn't have had to go into the office 5 days a week. And so I said, okay, like, let me get in touch. We had a big conversation about what the culture is like in publishing in general, and also in Harlequin in particular. And I thought, this sounds like this could be a good fit. So I applied, and here we are.
Oh my God.
That's so long. I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect. It's what I needed for a podcast. In those days of like having to put yourself out there, because I can imagine, like, I know when authors speak about, like, you know, putting themselves out there and how nerve-wracking it can be, like, how did it feel for you as an editor? Like you said, you're kind of isolated because you're at home. Like, you know, it works out because you're a new mom and it, like, ideal situation. But, like, I guess the word that was popping up into my mind as you were speaking was, like, you have to get people to trust you. They have to trust that, like, you know what you're doing. Did it feel like you have to, like, prove yourself? Like, how did that feel, like, putting yourself out there like that?
Oh, that's definitely a part of it, especially when you're first starting out, because you don't have contacts who can vouch for you and that sort of thing. A lot of the time, I would end up doing sort of short, sort of like not copy editing tests, but, you know, we would do like a little project to, so people could see if we vibed, like if my working style worked with their working style. So there's definitely a lot of situations where you feel like you're putting a lot of work in and not sure if you're going to get the reward that you're expecting out at the end. And sometimes it doesn't work out. But I think for freelancers, you can't really get anywhere if you're not willing to give people the opportunity to work with you without being paid first. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to have people, like you said, to trust you if you don't already have some sort of a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get this job with Romantic Suspense. How was that? I mean, because you've now switched over to Intrigue, but like, how was it coming into such a huge line for Harlequin?
I don't think I could have had a better experience, honestly. My manager at the time, Patience Bloom, was an absolute delight. She has been incredibly encouraging, basically telling me, yes, go ahead and do whatever it is that you want to do to find new authors or be fulfilled. And she never let me say, oh no, I feel like that's like, I'll be awkward or anything like that. She just said, you can do it. Of course, go do it. And that's been an incredible help. The very first week that I was working for Romantic Suspense was the week that Pitch Black was happening on Twitter. And I said, oh, can I just monitor the page and see if anything comes up? And she said, yes, of course. Don't feel like you're going to necessarily find a book, because that doesn't always happen, but you're welcome to. And it ended up being my first acquisition, which was amazing. Charlene Paris wrote a pitch that I loved, and her first book, Watchers of the Night, came out in December.
Yes. So, okay, you enter this new job, and go with me here, because in my mind, I know what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to make it make sense. You know what you're doing. You've been editing. You know how to edit. There's no question there. But you walk into Harlequin that has very specific like reader promises and all the things. Is there anything that you're doing to kind of prep yourself before looking for a new, your first project to work on? Like, I don't know. I think like Romantic Suspense is tricky, right? Like all the lines are very specific, but like Romantic Suspense is Romantic Suspense. Was there anything you had to learn that you hadn't been necessarily doing before you came on to like get yourself ready for this new position? Does that make sense?
It definitely does. I read every single Romantic Suspense book that I could. Honestly, we have a very generous policy at work where I think I can download 8 ebooks a week. And so I literally, that was what I did for the first few weeks. Every single book that we had published in the last like year and a half, just trying to make sure that I knew what I was talking about, so that when I went to my boss and said, I really love this story, she didn't look at me as if I was, you know, completely unprepared for what we were talking about. I wanted to make sure that what I was looking for was in line with what we do actually promise readers. And it is definitely a tricky one. Suspense, I feel like the suspense part, I completely get. I read a lot of like mysteries and noir and all that kind of stuff. But romantic suspense, like you said, is a very delicate balance. We want to make sure that the romance is more prominent than the mystery aspect, and it can be a tricky chemistry to kind of get right. And so I thought the only way I'm going to be able to do this is to read everything that I can get my hands on.
I mean, which is advice that you all as editors tell anybody that's wanting to submit to the line too. So I love that. I love that it's pretty much the same. So having done, you touched on it here a little bit, but like having done Romantic Suspense and now you're with Intrigue, I'm always like, if somebody is brand new to category, brand new to Harlequin, and they come across this episode, how would you describe both of those lines to them?
It's a little tricky when you first look at it, but once you start reading the individual stories, I feel like it's quite easy to tell the difference. Intrigue obviously is a little bit of a shorter word count, so that is one difference. But the story in Intrigue is very much about two people who are often working together to solve this mystery and then finding that emotional connection through the work. Whereas in Romantic Suspense, a lot of the times it's two people who have been thrown into a circumstance that they then are in this heightened emotional sense, and that is what brings them together. So they're not always working together. They're not always, you know, on the same side. Even there are people who are, you know, sometimes it's a protector, sometimes it's somebody who's, you know, you're not really sure who they are when they first start out. And that that emotional journey is very much based in the overarching suspense of the story, for lack of a better word. Whereas in intrigue, it is, you know, we find ourselves working to solve this problem, or this, you know, find a serial killer or whatever it is. But through the work, we respect each other. We find like common ground, and that's where the romance blossoms.
Editor wise, has it been like a big creative shift for you? Or was it, you know, because you've already been doing romantic suspense, now editing for intrigue, did it come just naturally?
I think there's always a little bit of a reset that needs to happen if you're working on things for different books. I have a couple of authors who write in a variety of genres. So like Tara Taylor Quinn writes special edition and romantic suspense. So the first time I edited a special edition, it was a completely different process, right? Like they're so far apart in terms of the way the stories are structured and everything. So intrigue, same thing. Like I've been doing a lot of reading of intrigue authors, trying to familiarize myself with all of my authors on my list and making sure that I know sort of the ins and outs of how they work. But it's nice to have a base that I have in already having worked on a lot of Harlequin novels to feel a little bit less, you know, like I'm shifting in a really big way.
Yeah. This podcast started because of an intrigue novel. Katie Richards' debut, me and my friend Sarah, just both 5-star read. And we were like, we have to start a podcast. We have to talk about this book.
I love that so much. Katie Richards is one of my authors now.
She's so good. She's so good. So can you walk us through day in the life of you as an editor?
Sure. It's not always the same, which is good. But it usually starts with about, I don't know, 20 emails, back and forth between whatever things are going on. On a good week, we'll have a lot of meetings as well. So, you know, our staff meetings where we're talking about new projects or things that we're bringing forward for acquisition, that kind of stuff. I think most of the editors for the category romance books, we are doing a lot of actual like line editing. I think I usually have in a month 2 to 4 books that I would be editing. So there's a lot of hours in the day that are spent in the manuscripts themselves, which is pretty great. I don't think you get the same feel if you're working with a lot of like say trade titles where you're doing some author communication and some agent communication and that kind of thing that takes up a lot of your day. Some days it's cover meetings. So we're talking about the direction that we want to take with a new story or with a new series, and talking with the art directors and trying to figure out, you know, how we're going to best package this book within the series and then also within, you know, the larger Harlequin brand. Sometimes it is talking to agents and negotiating contracts, that sort of thing. So it's pretty varied, but it always starts with emails.
It always starts with emails.
Yes. Trying to make sure that there are no fires I need to put out at the beginning of the day.
Are you editing? Do you try to do just like one at a time?
Yeah. Typically, it makes it easier for me to stay in one story.
Okay.
Definitely. But I work really fast. Partly, I think, because I was a freelancer where I had to work fast or else you weren't getting paid. So I can turn around a book, you know, in a week or so and then move on to the next one. And it's kind of nice.
For the new writer that may be listening that is, you know, wanting to submit, we'll say, to intrigue, what are some things that you see people get wrong?
I actually just wrote a blog post about this, and it's going to be up on Write for Harlequin pretty soon.
That is the Bible to me. Okay. I love writing for Harlequin.
So when you are submitting things to us in Submittable, we need a query letter and we need a full synopsis. And I have found, especially in the last little while, that a lot of times people don't want to spoil the story for you. So when they're sending you a synopsis, they just send you sort of like questions, or like, will they get together or won't they, or all that kind of stuff, because that's a great way to advertise your story when you're looking for readers. But if you're submitting something to an editor, we do in fact need to know, like, I'm okay with spoilers in that sense. I want to know what happens at the end. I want to know that you know what happens at the end, so that we can decide whether or not that's something that's going to fit within the reader promise that we're providing to our readers. So that's kind of a big one that happens quite often. And the other thing is, make sure that you read all of those guidelines that we have on Submittable and on Write for Harlequin, because there are, you know, as you I'm sure know, there is a lot of series that we produce that are similar if you look at them sort of from a broad view. And so something that you think might be a really good fit for special edition, in fact, would be a better romance novel or a better presents or something like that. And then, you know, with intrigue and romantic suspense, they are quite similar in terms of like the main plot beats. You just have to figure out which reader promise you're going to fulfill in the best way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. On the website, it says that you're excited to find new and interesting projects. Can you share any examples of anything interesting that has come your way recently? I'm always fascinated, especially with intrigue and romantic suspense. I'm like, as time progresses and like technology gets even crazier than you know, what we've seen, like there's so much you can do in that world. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, how is that being reflected? How are you seeing it? So like, what have you found interesting recently?
There's a few different avenues. Like you said, the technology aspect is super fascinating. I just went back to contract with Katie Mettner, and her spinoff series is going to be cybercrime, which I think is going to be really exciting. Because I don't think we've done a lot of that, but the projects that we have put out there have done really well when you're talking about, you know, these really high stakes sort of AI fueled or whatever it is. Those kinds of things are pretty exciting and new. And that seems like a fresh take on a lot of the mysteries that we would have. A book that I really enjoy that is coming out soon is a sort of a spy story for romantic suspense, which is a little bit different.
Oh my god.
There's going to be some international stuff happening. And it's like, you know, one last job because the couple sort of fell apart on the previous project. And now they've got to come back together to like save their boss. And I love it so much. It's by Rachel Astor, and it comes out in May, I believe.
I love a spy. Okay.
Me
okay.
Too.
I guess more so for a romantic suspense, but I mean, even sometimes in intrigue, like the small town's big secrets, what is it that works so well with those versus like the occasional big city that we'll see?
I think that's such a good point. I do have a few authors that work in bigger city settings, and I enjoy those books definitely, but it's more of a sort of, it can be more sprawling and there can be more things happening there that I feel like sometimes it makes it a little bit tricky to really drill down into the romance aspect of things. So that's one of the things I like about small towns with secrets, is that you are getting almost like a microcosm of like the bigger world, because you can have all of these really intriguing, you know, people in the town, but you're not focusing on like a huge picture. It's very close, and I feel like that lends itself to romance in a good way, having these really tight-knit situations where your two characters maybe are not part of that town, so it's like they are banding together against the rest of the people there, which also in that can heighten their own romantic emotional connections. There's lots of room for really funny situations as well. Like, you're not thinking about things in, you know, having to think about things like, say, transit or whatever. You can really make these small towns as quirky or as strange as you need them to be in order to really feel like your characters have to do everything together, which is kind of nice. Yeah, there's a lot of things I really like about it, but I probably, some of it comes down to also Twin Peaks. I love that so much.
Can you tell us like what's coming from Intrigue the rest of this year? Is there anything you can share?
I mean, there's always some really interesting things happening. We have some great mini series coming up from some of our big authors. And of course, everybody's, you know, we've got the new look, which is going to start to roll out in a couple of months, which is incredible. I mean, the packaging is just, we got to have like a little launch in the office, and we had all of the books, book covers printed out really big, and like seeing them all together is just, it's so nice. They look really great. It's a super refreshing take on what we had been doing in the past. And I feel like they're going to be really effective in showing, you know, what Harlequin is now versus what we have been in the past. It's, we're not, you know, throwing everything away. There's a lot of elements that are the same from what we have done in the past, but the, when you see them all on the shelf, it's just, it's such a great eye-catching thing. And I think readers are going to really gravitate to those.
Yeah, I've been loving these, the new covers for the different lines as you slowly start to see them roll out. It's
I know, we keep saying we want to make sure that, like, we just want to skip ahead a little bit for a few more months to be able to see everything, because some of the covers that we've been working on, you know, it's, they're not going to be out for another, like, 4 or 5 months, and it's just like, oh, I can't wait for everybody else to see
it. To see it, yeah. What about 2025? Like, looking ahead to the new year, are there any titles that are coming out then you're excited for?
Yeah, so it's still, it's kind of funny because I'm still, so many of the books that I'm currently working on for Intrigue will be quite late, like end of 2025 or beginning of 2026, just because of the way the production schedules work. So I still have a lot of books coming out in 2025 with romantic suspense. We're doing The Coltons of Owl Creek right now, which takes place in Idaho, and I'm running that continuity. And then next year, we're going to do two continuities for the Coltons, one in Arizona and one in Alaska. And I'm just reading through the Arizona books right now, and they are fantastic.
That is so cool. That is so cool. How is it for you, like, being in charge of the continuity? How is it, like, keeping things organized, stories straight? Like, take, because we love the continuities here, so... How is it for you working wise?
It was a little bit of a learning curve, definitely. I am lucky in the fact that some of my authors that are on my list already write pretty long-standing continuities. So there's that aspect of trying to keep things organized that I've already had to be doing for other series. But it's been really great to work with a number of different authors and trying to keep the tone similar but not the same. Because we want people to come to these books because they love the author's other stories. And then it's a lot of consulting current authors with the previous author of the book, with the people who are coming next, to make sure that everybody's kind of, you know, staying within the guardrails of the story, that we have this big Bible. And I read that a lot, and I rewrite things, and I, you know, send them back out to the authors and make sure that everybody's on board with the new thing. And there is definitely a lot of communication that happens that is over and above what we would do for just, you know, a one-on-one author situation. But it's so fun to be able to see them out in the world and know that, like, I have this entire 12 books or 6 books that are things that I have touched and that, you know, readers are going to read. I just, it's great.
Yeah. I can't imagine the feeling of, like, walking through the store and you're like, I worked on that.
It is so fun and satisfying.
Is there anything on, like, if you have an editor wish list, is there anything that you hope it, like, crosses your path?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot, but I really, as much as Intrigue does have a lot of, like, law enforcement characters, I'm really interested in seeing things that are from a slightly different perspective, like, you know, Private Eye, sort of like modern noir kind of stuff. I love that. Things like maybe, you know, an obscure Bureau of Investigation kind of situation where it's like, you know, not quite X-Files level of, you know, aliens or anything like that. But people who are investigating crimes that are a little bit outside of the norm, I think that would be super great to see. I would personally love to see, you know, like a Murder, She Wrote sort of situation where, like, you know, this writer, because books about books are always so great. You know, a crime writer who stumbles upon a story that she, you know, ropes in the local sheriff or something like that. I think that would be super fun. And as always, I mean, you'll be tired of this because I've already said it a bunch of times, but a Twin Peaks murder mystery, if that yes. crossed my desk, I will move heaven and earth to publish that book. I will, anybody, I truly, it would be my white whale.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I hope listeners, if you if you need inspiration, there you go. That was like, I loved Denise and Wheatley. She was doing like, because she's just kind of obsessed with like these true crime docs and like was really leaning into that. I know for a little bit, like with both, I think, Intrigue and even I think with like maybe like Love Inspired Suspense, like we were leaning into like the cold, like the cold cases. I love cold cases, like bring it back. There's just so much you can, I love when people just kind of disappear off the face of the earth. Like there's so many cool, really sad, but really cool things you can do.
No, I totally agree. I like the suspense genre is so varied and we can, you know, we have room to explore so many different, you know, topics and themes. And I, it's great to add the romance layer to those stories. Cause I just feel like it makes the emotional resonance so much, so much more for a reader.
Is that what you think readers are like? I know a lot of readers want to get into romantic suspense, but they're hesitant because of like the danger and the suspense part. But do you think that's what readers are missing out on if they don't give it a chance? It's like seeing the way authors are able to bring the romance in the face of everything that the characters have going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's certainly something that I feel like a lot of readers would enjoy. I mean, it is definitely, there are times where, you know, some of our stories are maybe not scary, but there are some bad things that happen to people, right? And I can definitely, from experience, I know that sometimes there's a time and a place where you're like, I am not in the good, a good place to be reading this book right now. I'll put it aside and read something else. But I would say, especially with romantic suspense, so many of the stories there are just really great love stories that also have an element of danger in them. And so I would certainly encourage readers to check at least one or two out and see, you know, maybe there's a hint of something there that they would really get into. We've got a ton of like Western romances. So if you're into like, you know, Montana Mavericks or something like that, adding in an element of crime without necessarily an element of like a serial killer or something like that is a great entry point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's certainly room for a lot of exploration within romantic suspense and an intrigue that aren't, you know, aren't really dark stories. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, is there, do y'all have any maybe like plans for any pitches coming up again soon? Or what should the aspiring intrigue or romantic suspense writer, what should they be looking out for? Like, how can they reach you?
Sure. I'm actually going to be taking pitches this summer for Romance Slam Jam. I think it's in July. And I'm really excited about that. This is the first time I've been able to do a virtual pitch event. So I think that's going to be really fun. And then the other thing that is coming up sooner than I kind of realized is the Romance Includes You mentorship program is coming back this year. And we're having open submissions from May the 1st until May 31st for any author who has been who has not been published. So if you've never been published with a traditional romance publisher, you should absolutely submit to the mentorship. It is on top of getting a contract to publish your first novel. You get a year of working with an editor closely to develop your story, to go through the whole process of publishing. I think there's a stipend for, you know, on top of the advance for the contract. And it's been super valuable. The people who have come through the mentorship so far have all had their books come out. Most of them have gone back to contract with Harlequin and are still publishing with us. And it's just a great program. I love being part of it. I'm one of the readers, and it's really inspiring to see what people come up with. I obviously, we have, you know, open submissions all the time for people, but this mentorship program is really something that I would encourage people who are looking to get into Harlequin and like have a fuller experience of the publishing industry. I think it's very valuable.
Well, I will have links to that. I remember seeing it on, I think, Twitter like a month ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, the mentorship project is coming back. So I'll make sure that I leave that linked below. But is there anywhere where you're comfortable with people following you? Are you like, are you on Twitter? Is it through the Write for Harlequin? Like,
right. I am on Twitter. Sometimes I feel like I should stop, but I'm still there. I'm also on Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm Editrix Emma everywhere, pretty much. So if you follow me, if you have any questions, you can certainly send me a message. I'm happy to answer and or at least tell you where you can find the answers.
Well, thank you for hanging out with us today. You have to come back. You have to come back. There will be plenty of books coming from Intrigue that we have to talk about. So
sounds great.